the volume.
Hey guys, it's the Sessions presented by FanDuel. It might be cold, but the sports calendar is heating up, baby, and there's no better place to get in on the action than with FanDuel. The app is safe, secure, and so, so easy to use. FanDuel always has exclusive offers, boosts, and more. And when you win, you're gonna get paid real fast. FanDuel has lots of ways to play, like with the spread, money line, over, under, team totals, player props, and so much more. You can jump into the action at any time during the game with live betting. And you can combine multiple bets from the same game in a same game parlay to try out the same game parlay plus. Get in on that. And FanDuel is now live in Maryland, y'all. So use the promo code Renee, R-E-N-E-E, and download the FanDuel app today to start making every moment more. Disclaimer, 21 plus in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG for Colorado, Iowa, Minneapolis, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Illinois, and Virginia. 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342. 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat for Connecticut. 1-800-9-WITH-IT for Indiana. 1-877-770-STOP for Louisiana. Visit mdgamblinghelp.org for Maryland. Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789 for Tennessee. Visit ksgamblinghelp.com for Kansas. 1-800-522-4700 for Wyoming or visit www.1800gambler.net for West Virginia. Hey guys, welcome to the best of the Sessions. What we have done is we've combined the best of Tuesday's episode and Thursday's episode, mashed them together to give you a beautiful little audio gift for your ear holes. We have some awesome, awesome guests on the show. Cannot thank people enough for taking the time to come hang out with me. Give me a little bit of their time. We give you a little bit of that. We all get to hang out and enjoy it, learn a little bit about each other. So it's really cool to mash these all together and you guys can get those little abbreviated highlights of both of the interviews throughout the week. Also, of course, if you want to listen to the full lengths, you can do that. They all exist. Just make sure to check out all things from the Volume Podcast Network. Like, subscribe, turn on those notifications, all that good stuff. But let's get into it. Here's the best of the Sessions.
I thought, like, when I stopped drinking, it'd just be like, oh, okay, I'm just going to feel like $1 million and just fucking kid. But it doesn't work like that when you've been drinking and using drugs to, you know, excess, more or less going on, you know, like 18 years.
Your body. Yeah, but you've not been on drugs, though, just to, like, clarify.
Well, I mean, and not me, but anybody, you know.
Yeah, like, okay. Yeah, I was just making
or whatever clear. It is, you know what I mean? Your body needs time to, like, adjust, you know what I mean? When I first wrestled again, so I came back in January, and it was weird. Like, just being in the ring was weird. It felt strange. Like, I came back and did a promo, and that was cool because I didn't have to do anything physical. I just got to talk. I was, like, super relaxed. So my first match back, you think it's just going to be like, oh, okay, well, now you're sober, so you're just going to feel like $1 million. It doesn't really work like that. And, like, I was weird. It was like my legs were in quicksand. I didn't have any adrenaline. Not that I didn't have any adrenaline so much as, like, I wasn't nervous or, like, and it's hard to put into words, but it used to be, like, this big, long, giant process to get ready to go out and do a match or wrestle. It's like this transformation to be ready to go to the ring. And I think people who probably don't, you know, spend their lives, you know, like, partying too much or whatever, probably, like, take for granted just waking up in the morning and feeling good. I feel like I'm cheating. Like, the novelty hasn't fully worn off.
Of, like, not having a hangover?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, like, waking up and being like, okay. Like, I don't have to worry about, like, being massively dehydrated or feeling like crap or whatever. Like, for me, it's almost like, oh, I got, like, a cheat code or something, you know? But, like, that first match, I felt terrible. Like, I just felt, like, off. Like, it was weird. Mm-hmm. I can't really explain it. Like, I was just, like, chemically imbalanced and, like, it was strange. And then, like, got a little better the next match and the next match. I finally wrestled Brian at a pay-per-view and we more or less just went to the ring, like, the first time I ever met him, just kind of got in the ring and just wrestled. Then I kind of started feeling my mojo again. Yeah. I was like, but it took me like a month or something.
How much did that scare you to like have that feeling of like, oh my God, am I going to get back to getting that mojo? Like, who is this new person that I am all of a sudden?
Oh yeah. It was stressful. I was like, oh no, do I suck now? This sucks.
Right. Right.
But then very quickly got my mojo back. So it's somewhere in the middle of that match with Brian, I think something snapped back. It's hard to explain.
Stella got her groove.
And then it's been like better and better. Now I'm having a pretty good year, man. Having like a ton of fun, having a bunch of really good matches. Starting to like really put everything together as far as like the style I want to do. The style I kind of even was picturing like 3-something years ago, like while I was hurt in WWE after I freaking worked every night for 2 months with a torn tricep.
Yeah.
And I was off. And I've talked about this before, you know, I was like in rehab when I rehab for the tricep or whatever, when I realized like I wanted to leave and started watching other wrestling and stuff. But even like way back then when I was picturing what I wanted to do and what I wanted to become in the ring, it looked something like what you're seeing now, all that long ago. And it's been a lot. So it's been like, you know, evolving in the ring and constantly trying new stuff and getting better. And, you know, you always keep learning and keep growing. Well, and keep
I don't
getting
think a
better.
Lot of people do though. Like I actually want to like give you credit for that because I don't think a lot of people always want to grow and work and try to get better. I think sometimes people think that they like got the keys to the castle and that they have it figured out and you become really stagnant. And I think that's something that you've been awesome at is not being stagnant. You are not a standstill person.
You gotta
constantly like learning and growing. And
I mean,
like,
you gotta evolve with the business. You see a lot in this business, people who are still stuck in whatever year they were that they come from. They're stuck in the 80s or the 70s or the 2000s or whatever it is, when like the business is totally different than it was even 10 years ago. I was talking about this with some of the kids, and I talked about it a little bit after
the
show.
Some of the kids, you old man.
Yeah, man. Dude, but it's wild. Well, they were just asking, just like, you know, just talking to some of these kids that are training like less than a year at the GCW show in New York. And it kind of hit me while I was talking to them because I'm like, I don't really have any answers for anything, you know, it's just like experience. You just got to get experience. I don't know. That's my answer when people ask me about anything. I go, I don't know, get experience. Because it's one of the things I said to them was like, there is no one right or wrong answer as far as pro wrestling is concerned to almost anything. I said, everything I tell you could turn out to be crap. If somebody tells you this is the way it is and this is the way it needs to be done and this is right, they might be really smart, but take all that with a grain of salt. Mm-hmm. Make your own decisions. Use your own brain. Look at the people. What are the people into? What's working? What's not? Because I was brought up on a bunch of certain stuff. I think I talk about this in the book, you know, like.
Yeah, you had a book come out in this last year.
Oh,
like,
yeah, that's a whole.
God, there's so many like layers to what this year has been.
The
like,
audio book just came out, man. My dad's over, man. I'm so sick of that book. Like, I'm too close to it now. Now I hate it. I never want to read it again. But, you know, I came up in the Les Thatcher, you know, system of like getting caught talking about your match before the show was like a sign of weakness. You know, it was all about calling the ring. Like, oh, these kids in the ring 2 hours before the show talking about their spots. And hardcore wrestling, quote unquote, or whatever was garbage and all this and that. And, you know, that's how I was taught that this is the way. And in WWE, they tell you a lot of stuff. You got to do this and this and this. This is the way it needs to be done. There's all this stuff that's just wrong. This is like totally wrong. And it's demonstrably wrong now with AEW on a national level. You know, where they say, oh, you're doing too much or you're not selling, grab a hold, you know, all this fucking shit. Like there's so many matches I have now that I literally couldn't do in WWE. Mm-hmm. Vince would just flip his lid. For instance, like, I don't know, off the top of my head, like me and Eddie versus the Young Bucks. Great match. Guarantee you Vince would hate it. He'd be like, oh, you're not selling. You're doing too much here or whatever. Les would probably hate it, you know, for similar reasons. Because there's so many different styles, you know. Things in Japan work that, you know, somebody would look at and go, that's stupid. That doesn't make sense. But in the universe of Japanese psychology, it works. In the context of deathmatch psychology, some stuff works. There's like all kinds of different.
I really want to do a podcast with you that's all on deathmatch psychology.
Well, yeah, I mean, okay. And that, you know, that's it. There's all these different, and Lucha has got its own thing. I mean, think of like in the universe of WWE, Santino's Cobra yeah. could knock a 300-pound man out cold, and people believe it and know it, and it's part of that construct. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So like, there's no right or wrong, and you know, you can take from everybody, but don't let anybody tell you this is the way. Just keep learning. You know, this is what I told them. There's so many shows now, like the GCW audience, the AEW audience, I think on the whole is like this too. Defy Wrestling, like all these places where, I mean, I'm talking about this type of specific indie show where it's almost more like a concert where everybody comes and they know the band and they know their songs and they come to have a good time and they want it.
You
want to
see the best.
They want to be there. Like a Defy or GCW is more like going to a concert, you know, in a lot of ways. It's not like a bunch of people who are like, all right, what is this wrestling stuff we're watching? No, they're like super passionate wrestling fans and they watch everything and they know who everybody is and they understand wrestling on such a deeper level than fans on a general indie show when I was first coming up. Like, it's so different. It's so awesome. And it's such a pleasure to be on a show like that. I'm like, man, some of these freaking kids don't even know how good they got it now. Like, this is so awesome just to have such a good relationship. Like, it's such a pleasure to wrestle in front of those fans. And yeah. I'm not trying to be like some kind of, not trying to be corny when I say it. It's just, it's awesome. I think a lot of the mainstream's stereotypical feeling of a wrestling fan would be something that's not what it actually is. Wrestling fans on the whole today are so smart and so educated and so passionate as much as anything like fans of music Star or Wars. Movies or yeah. comic books and, you know, the kind of people that say like, oh, there's a bunch of nerds or whatever. It's like, no, they're just smart and passionate and fuck off. Like, it's a really yeah, stupid way to look at it.
Fuck off, like, yes.
But it's no different than, yeah. you know, comic books or movies or anything yeah. that people are passionate about. Yeah. You know? Like, I'm one of these fans.
Yeah.
So we all just get to do this together.
Let's take it back to like the beginning though of you going into rehab. What was your headspace leading up to that?
Night sweats.
I've never seen crazy anything like night it in sweats, my life.
Crazy nightmares. My chemicals are all imbalanced. Yeah. Wacky mood swings. You can attest to all that. You know,
yeah,
when I say it hasn't been easy, you know, like the not drinking part is easy. It's not like I have some desire to drink. I have no desire to drink. I can't even imagine drinking right now. Like,
yeah.
It's just so beyond like that. The not drinking is easy. We'll stop drinking. I wanted to stop drinking for a long time. I was trying to quit drinking for a long time. Mm-hmm. Just the dealing with all the after effects of what happens to you physically when your body goes through this crazy metamorphosis, trying to recalibrate itself, has not been easy. You know?
So,
and I'm on national television while I'm going through these fucking problems. You know,
it's actually
so
like,
it's like in front of yeah. everybody. It sucks. I mean, a lot of people in my position would have stayed in rehab a lot longer. Would have stayed in hiding a lot longer. You know, yeah. I was 3 months later. The one therapist chick I had straight up told me to retire.
Yeah.
She was like, start a wrestling school, train some kids. She's like, you know what the problem is? You got to get out of there. I was like, I don't think it's that. But I mean, I went in on Halloween night and I was back on TV in January.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, you know.
It's great, but there are those ups.
It makes
and those
me
downs.
A little self-conscious, you know.
Sure.
I feel like everybody's staring at me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also I kind of don't give a fuck. That was a big part about going to rehab, was kind of the relief of it, that like now there's nothing to hide. Kind of figure I didn't know how people's reactions was going to be, like if people
you had your phone off for a really long time too.
Months.
Yeah. Yeah, you were in airplane mode for a long time.
That was great. So when you first go into rehab, they take your phone.
Which sucked for me.
Yeah,
I had to wait for you to like call me from a payphone every day.
Good thing I remembered your number.
Honestly, right?
They take your phone, and after however long of, you know, good behavior, they'll eventually give it back to you so you can have your phone in rehab. So one day they called me to the front and they're like, you can have your phone back. And I was just feeling really good about everything. I was like so happy not having a phone. And I made a weird face and she's like, you don't have to take it. We can just keep it here locked up if you want. And I was like, you just keep it. Yeah, I went back the whole rest of the time.
Yeah.
Even when I left and went home, when I went into rehab, I lived in Vegas. When I got out of rehab, I didn't live in Vegas anymore.
Well, talk about going, like, so you
I just went straight to the airport.
You didn't even book your ticket on your phone.
I just went to the airport old school with my ID and no phone. I had my phone, but I turned it off. Even when I got out, I didn't turn on my phone. And I didn't turn it on for a long time. And I realized, like, how great it feels.
The freedom.
Like, the
that
air movie. Is sweeter. Sounds and sights and everything are better. Like, and you don't have a TV. So it's just a room with a bed in it and a chair, a bathroom, no radio, no phone, no computer, nothing. You know, there's like a little library where you can read books. And take them back to your room. That's about it. And your sleep is all messed up. Mm-hmm. Sleep is really hard to come by there. And
it's still hard for you to sleep.
And you're up, you know, at 7 a.m, you start all the activities and stuff, you know what I mean? So sleep is really hard to come by. And they come burst in your room like every hour to make sure you're not dead. So it's a lot of just sitting there staring at the ceiling, staring at the wall, you know, but it was great. Being disconnected eventually felt so great.
I bet.
Pretty quickly.
Yeah.
That I was like, I don't want to go
That's
back.
That's a detox
I don't
we
wanna...
all need. Shit.
Yeah. I highly recommend it. And people couldn't fathom it. A lot of people couldn't fathom not being like tied to their phone. But like, we didn't have cell phones till how long ago, you know?
Yeah. We went a long time.
People lived for a long time before phones were invented. You can do it. I promise
Let's talk about before you went into rehab. Like, what was the buildup? And for you, I guess like the breaking point or realizing like I have to go and get help. I mean, you said a second ago that like you wanted to quit drinking. It was something you were trying to do and wanted to do, but you had to go to rehab.
Nothing bad happened.
Yeah. I want to make that clear on my end too, is that right. Like, yeah, nothing ever. I think people thought like maybe something went down.
Yeah. I didn't just, go like, to no. jail. Nothing. Just like, I just couldn't stop. Mm-hmm. I was trying for like the longest time, which sounds stupid. If you don't know, you just go, just stop drinking. Here's the thing too, that I think that I didn't really know until I started dealing with this, but I don't know if you never had to really look into it. You just might not know if you just stop drinking, if you drink a lot, you can die. Like I may have always drink beer all night back in the day, whatever. Sleep 2 hours, go out, wrestle 25 minutes.
Oh, you're like a high functioning alcoholic. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll just after the show, just get fucked up. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Wake up the next morning, sweat it out. Never had any problems. At some point, it was literally the first time I tried to stop, and I was experiencing for the first time alcohol, at least that I remember, alcohol withdrawal, which is as bad as withdrawal from just about anything. And it's dangerous and a lot more dangerous in a lot of ways. The first thing they told me this, and that they're like, yeah, just quitting drinking cold turkey, you know, at a certain threshold, which I was at, it's the worst thing you can do. It's the most dangerous thing you can do. You can just go into cardiac arrest and die. Or what's really common is you have seizures. Something really bad can happen from that. That's what happened to Cass. I was terrified of that for the longest time. The feeling of it is like crushing physical anxiety. Not anxiety like you're nervous about something. The physical feeling of anxiety, like breathing's messed up, like you're like twitchy, like they call it the shakes, because you know you're literally like shaking. And there are times it'd be like a TV, and I feel like people are gonna think that I'm like on drugs because I'm sober. So a lot of times I'd be talking to people or doing whatever, I like have a little shot or a little flash or whatever just to mellow out, because I'd be like, people are gonna think that I'm on crack right now. So I was leveling myself out for like the longest time. And that gets really tiring. So like every night, especially like TVs, was like the longest days, because I'd be having this like horrible like alcohol withdrawal at TV. I was terrified I was gonna have a seizure on live TV or on a plane. And like the plane would have to land.
It makes me sick to think
so to avoid that happening on a plane, I would just I would never be at an airport on a plane without being nicely buzzed. If I didn't have time to like hit the bar before I get on the plane, or it's like morning or the bars are closed or something, you know, whatever, I'd just be sitting on the plane like, come on with the cart. Come on. Come on with the drinks. Like,
yeah.
Because
yeah.
I'm like,
I didn't know that about the planes. I knew that with the other stuff, yeah. But I never thought about that.
I was real scared of like something catastrophic like that happening, you know? Yeah. So I was like really worried something like that was going to happen. And I just like, I was just so exhausted with it because everything has to like revolve around staying level. And like, I couldn't enjoy wrestling because I was so worried about that.
You're battling all day.
Because like, you can't go on TV and wrestle fucked up. I had to be like sitting there worried, going through withdrawal, worried, you know, so like as soon as I got done, like it's like this big wave of relief, like, oh, okay, I got through another day, got through another TV and didn't have a seizure and die on live TV. Sweet. So I immediately start getting loaded because now it's been however long with it. So, and then you just end up drunk again. So yeah. It's like this never ending cycle of hell. Like there was like months, absolute hell. It wasn't like, okay, I'm all stressed out and I have problems. And like, it wasn't like, okay, I need to go to rehab and talk about my feelings. It was, I'm going to die. It can happen to anybody, man. Like there's, 100%. I don't know what the threshold is, but like once you start feeling like that, those withdrawal symptoms, be it like alcohol or pills or whatever it is, that's when you're in trouble. Doing whatever you're doing to normalize yourself, you know, that you know, it's a bad slope.
So the night that you had to go in, you had come home. It was Halloween night, and that's when it was kind of like, okay, this has to happen right now.
Yeah, it all happened.
We were moving the next week. It was like, oh my God, everything was happening all at once. That was like a fucking trip. That was nuts.
Yeah, like a lot of shit was happening at once, like because we were getting ready to move. So we're dealing with all that. I was trying to sell a house, trying to buy a house. And the whole time it's getting really bad. And I'm just trying to stay level, you know.
We have a 4-month baby.
Yeah, and we just had a baby. And I'm like, that's when I first tried to stop, you know, before she even came. And then that just made it worse. Like, and you can't be drunk when you're holding the baby, you know? It was like obvious before the baby even got here that I was like, you got to fucking stop drinking. It was just a lot harder to do.
I thought it would be. I mean, I know you weren't on your phone and I mean, you're not on social media. Those are not like a thing that are in your life anyways, but knowing that that it was public information, that people knew that that's what happened.
Much as that was a worry at first of like why you don't want to do it. Cause you're like, oh, I don't want to be known as that. I don't want people to look at me as like a fuck up or a fucking addict or a drunk or I don't want to feel weird, you know, like it's embarrassing to a degree, you know, so
people get their hands on it.
That's beforehand. So I didn't tell anybody. Like I said, it all happened in like 15 minutes. Like it was like, I could feel the world closing in on me. I think I knew subconsciously that it was like, it was coming. I know I had this one indie show for Sammy for Wrestling Revolver. That was the last show I did. Got through that last indie show for Sammy because I was like, I can't bail on this, you know, they're counting on me. And I think I was just like, I could feel like the world closing in on me because like people were texting me, like Eddie texted me like, you all right or something? I'm like, yeah, why? And I'm like, so I knew you were like talking to people.
Shout out to Eddie, by the way. Eddie was honestly so like was one like, of those people he checked in on me a lot.
I was starting to feel like people were noticing whether they were or not. I knew you were. So I was like, I felt like the world was like closing in on me. I was in Des Moines, got a Southwest flight. They don't serve booze on Southwest flights for some reason.
Well, that was during like pandemic times. Yeah. Right.
So I knew that. So I was like, well, I'm getting loaded before I get on this plane, 3-hour flight. So I was like loaded when I landed, came home. I feel like you were already like mad at me. Or I don't even know. Like I could just feel the entire world closing in on me. And I was just like, I cannot go another day like this. I can't go one more day. It happened in like minutes. Yeah. I was just like, I'm going to Rio. And you're like, okay. I call the place. I was like, it was Halloween night. I was like, I didn't tell anybody else or anything. And I was standing outside. I'm on the phone with
them.
That
was so
like giving them my information or like my credit card information or something. And like
kids are
walking up to me while I'm on the phone with rehab and they're like, trick or treat. I'm like, give me 1 second. I'm gonna pop a Snickers bar in here. Yeah, yeah. And they're like, one can beer. I'm like, right now. They're like, cool. Called Uber. It was maybe 10, 15 minutes away from the house. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
An hour after I walked into the door, I was just like walking into rehab. It just was like,
yeah,
it was over. And I was probably in some kind of a stupor, you know, for a minute. But what I was getting to with the when people finding out, I don't know what kind of state of mind I was in for the first. I felt really defeated for like the first day, just like really defeated. But then I got in a little payphone thing with you, and you were like, I was like, what's the deal? You said, yeah, I talked to Tony and like Mega, and everything's cool. They just want to know how you want to broach the subject, because like I was advertised for a match. So they're like, do you want to tell people? Or
it's not like you were going to be off for like a weekend. You were going to be off obviously for like,
yeah, or do you want to just say like it was up to me? It was like we can so, and I was like, I mean I'm not gonna lie, the next day I talked to you on the little phone and they're like, yeah, they just like everybody knows. And I was like, huh.
Yeah, there's okay. Like some freedom with that almost, right?
Everybody knows I'm in rehab now. And like, I don't have a phone. So like, I'm not like, I don't know what the reaction is or anything, but I knew it was out there. Like a weight had been lifted off my shoulders. I just went, oh, fuck, everybody knows.
Yeah.
Because this thing is this thing I've been hiding, trying to hide from people for so long. Mm-hmm. That once it's like, oh, everybody knows. And fuck them, I don't care.
I remember like, feeling the same way too.
Yeah, it was just a very much like, fuck them, I don't care. They can call me whatever they want and call me whatever names they want. I don't give a shit. I'm doing what I got to do for myself. Like, fuck them. And credit to them. Like, they were totally, AEW, Tony, are like totally cool. He said, if you never came back, that would have been cool. Like,
yeah,
they didn't bug me to come. They, you know, when I came back, it was because I just went like, well, I guess I should probably come back now. Everything, you know.
Yeah. And your book came out that week too. Your book was dropping. The publishers are calling me and I'm like,
I think the book came out like
days after,
2nd or something.
Yeah.
And they had this whole book tour planned out and everything. And I didn't tell them. I just like,
you disappeared. Yeah.
One day stopped answering my phone. So that was another thing I missed. I didn't get to enjoy, after all the work of the book, which is a lot of work, I didn't get to enjoy any of the spoils of like it coming out and people enjoying it. And I've been waiting for, I've been excited about it coming out to see, hope that people enjoy it. And I didn't get to enjoy any.
Oh my God. It's so crazy.
But it was, that's another great thing, because it just took that whole stress off, because I'm sure they're, you know,
you did your work.
Sure, it didn't blow the literary world away, you know. So,
well, I think it actually
played. Oh, smashing success as far as like, I've gotten so much positive feedback from people that I like, that whose opinion really, it makes me really happy that they enjoyed it. That like, I don't think that book could have been more of a success as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was amazing. Okay, let's fast forward. So, You go to rehab, you come back, and now you're here. I mean, I don't know, but I guess we can kind of come to like present day where like you're still, you know, you were saying earlier how just recently you had that promo where you were saying like people have no idea how it's been and like what you've been through. But yeah, I mean, it's not just this like go to rehab, come back. And before we even get to that though, you saw that comparison of like before you went to rehab to after when you came back and everyone's like, holy shit, look at you.
Yeah, I look like shit, huh?
A little puffy. But seeing now where people are like, holy shit, look at this guy. Like seeing you now when you like come out, you're fucking shredded. You've got these abs. Like you literally look 10 years younger.
Well, a lot of people, it actually started annoying me because people be like, oh my God, you look so good. You're in such good shape. And I'm like, I'm not in good shape. I actually am in shit shape, because if you are gone for a period of time and then come back to wrestling, nothing replicates actually wrestling for whatever reason. You can do all the kettlebells, you can do all the sprints, you can do whatever you want. Till you get back in the ring, you're not going to be in ring shape, you know? And dealing with like a hip injury, a leg injury, chemical balance is all fucked up, and dealing with injuries, like training's all fucked up because I have a tiny baby at home, and that's hard, You know, it's just,
yeah, as if
just
that's not hard enough alone, having like a brand new baby. And
anybody who has
and
a like, kid knows it's exhausting.
Totally. Then you add all these other layers on. It's like, oh my God, you want to like pull your hair out.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm busy and you're busy and we got this baby. We're trading the baby back and forth. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's wild. But
yeah. Oh my God, it's really crazy. Everyone says like that first year of having a baby like really tests you. And this really was like those like, holy shit, like white knuckling it, Jesus take the wheel.
Yeah,
like, it was nuts.
And my mood's been all messed up, mm-hmm. and everything, like having a crying baby when you're like chemically imbalanced in the brain, I guess is the only way I could put it, is like hard, you know, but it's great. I've become that guy. I'm like obsessed with my baby. It wasn't at first, like a lot of people go, the first time you ever hold your baby. And I was like, okay. And I heard that enough to where I was like, okay, I'm looking forward to that. This should be cool. Held the baby. Nothing.
Nothing.
Not John. Nothing. Not nothing, but it was too surreal. It was like, it was so surreal. That I'm like, and I was terrified that I was going to drop her or something.
Well, I had my C-section. So you were literally the first person that held her.
Yeah, it happened so
quick.
I was like
shaking. I had been in labor for 24 hours. Like she was trying to nurse off of you.
Yeah, she's trying to suck at my boob. I was like, I don't think that's what you're looking for, man. But yeah, it happened so quick that I just go, pull it out of you. And I'm like, huh? What? Like, it's so surreal. And you're so scared and terrified and everything for the first few months or whatever. Well, you get and it's like everybody tells you, you figure it out. You know what to do. Sure. Like your instincts take over. And whatever the point was, you know, 6, 8, 10 months or whatever, I'm just like, oh, like now I totally get it. Like I'm so obsessed with this baby. I love her so much. Mm. I want to fucking puke.
I know.
It's disgusting. Like,
God, I just want to.
It's disgusting how much you can love something. It's crazy because I get to be madly in love with two women.
Yes.
Like I already have you and now I've made another one of you.
Isn't it the best? Oh my God. But it's crazy because she's actually so much of you. She is like you. It's so funny how much people say that. They're like, oh, your firstborn daughter is your husband. And that's Nora. Like there's just something so special about that father-daughter relationship. Like I'm her mom. We have this, you know, we have that mother-daughter relationship, but something about that father-daughter relationship that is just
the
untouchable magic.
The reaction you get from your dogs when you come home is always a really good feeling. When you come home off the road, your dogs freak out. They jump up and they start running around in circles, you know, and they always do that. I still got that, you know, but now it's like doubled because now I get the baby pop.
Mm.
The baby pop it's a good pop. It feels good.
She just, for people watching on YouTube. So John got home the other day and he got dropped off in an Uber and her and I are sitting on the lawn and he was like 20 yards away. She saw you and was like, ah! Her hands go straight up because she wants John to come pick her up. Like that's her big thing is the hands go up to come get me, come get me. The reaction she has to seeing you just like, oh my God, it melts my entire body. Yeah. I die.
I'm totally that guy now where I'm like, look at pictures of my baby. Check it out. And they're like, nice picture. But I'm like, oh no, we're going to scroll through them all.
But there's more.
But there's so many other people like that. I have text conversations with people that basically we just send pictures of our babies to each other. Like people who have the babies know that like I need somebody to show us a picture to and you're gonna look at it.
Oh my
and,
God.
You know, you're just falling back and forth, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like a bunch of people had babies like all around the same time.
Yeah. You know? It's nice. It is nice to have so many friends that all have like babies and we can all just like, yeah, group chat.
Comparison, you know.
They're just the best.
What is your memory of doing Talking Smack?
So I enjoyed it in the sense of sometimes I was trying to get fired, like bringing up fisting on Talking Smack. I was
the
trying
hog.
The hog. Oh God, I forgot about the hog. Doing a whole bit for weeks on end, and when they told me after I'd done it the first time, don't talk about James Ellsworth having a huge hog. And I would just bring it up constantly because I was so frustrated at not being cleared to wrestle that I was ready to go. And also sometimes they would bring me to TV just to do Talking Smack.
It was a hit television show. Of course they did.
It wasn't so hit that they kept it going. So
yeah, I mean,
so,
it lives on now, not to what we were doing, but it does still kind of exist to a degree.
What do you mean?
It's still a show. We're
Talking
just not
Smack
on
is
it.
A show?
It is, right?
No.
I think it is.
Nah.
They do like Raw Talk and Talking Smack. It's much different from what you and I were doing.
Oh, okay.
Now it's like a polished in a studio show.
Oh, okay.
We were like, we had like no backdrop. We had like, Rhino was coming in dressed as Santa Claus and shit. Like we.
Nobody's accusing AJ Styles of being a flat earther. is that not happening on their shows?
I'm pretty sure that's where it got kiboshed.
Okay. Okay.
So I always loved doing that show, but yeah, it was a really interesting time in your career where I was like, well, I'm reaping the benefits of working with a man who, like, it's a really special place when you, like, don't give a shit and you can just have fun. You don't really care what the repercussions are going to be. So I was loving that, but I know for you it was, like, definitely a weird part in your career where I was like, what's happening?
Yeah, so there were parts of it that I really enjoyed that really made me laugh. We had one episode. It was really, really great. Alexa Bliss is on. Maybe she had just lost the championship or something like that. I don't remember exactly the thing. But I had said something to her, and then she's also like, and the Patriots just lost the Super Bowl. And, but this was on a Tuesday. The Super Bowl was Sunday. That's when they had that great comeback in the fourth quarter. And there was a writer in the back saying, see something about the Patriots. She didn't know what was going on, so she said, and the Patriots lost. I was like, well, great news. I'm sure you've missed it, but the Patriots actually won. They came back. And she was just so like, I don't know.
Well, that was a very funny
the
moment
Miz
on that
one,
show.
The Miz one.
I mean, the Miz one's kind of the most epic thing.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, well, we don't need to like harp on this, but what is like your recollection of that show in that moment? When that was all going down with you and Mike?
Part of me like doesn't want to let the cat out of the bag, but part of me loves the story.
Tell the story. Tell the story. Tell the story.
I think Mike may have told the story already, so maybe the cat's already out of the bag.
The cat left the bag and is in the alley. Let's
okay.
get to it.
So Miz was very frustrated. He was Intercontinental Champion and wasn't being on TV much. I was very frustrated that they weren't clearing me to wrestle despite numerous doctors having cleared me to wrestle. And you know, I understand why, but that's a long story anyway. So just getting
we'll get
to the point of my frustration. So we came up with this thing, and the original plan that Mike and I had come up with was I was going to fucking deck him. We wanted to get under each other's skin so much that it was plausible that I would legit be angry enough to punch him. And so that was the intent. And the idea was either they're going to fire me or it's going to make people want to see the match so much that they're going to have to clear me to wrestle. But then Mike did such a great job. Intuitively, I felt it was better to walk off.
Interesting.
And leave him, because it was also like, God, this is so good. Leave him with his heat.
Right.
And it was like...
He was like in tears. He had tears in his eyes.
He was so good. He was magic.
Yeah, he was.
He was magic. And I think that's the thing. Mike and I don't like each other, legitimately. But Mike is also somebody that I respect a lot for working very, very hard. And so, like, when he was just going off and I was like, this is so good. It'd be so good if I punched him. But maybe it would resonate more and be better for him if I walked.
Right.
So that's what happened. So yeah, and then everybody, including Maurice, was like, what is going on?
Yes.
Why is this happening?
I remember they cut to me. I'm like, and we're going to take a quick commercial break. not really sure what's happening here.
So yeah.
So if you had actually decked him, I might have blacked out because it was so tense sitting between the two of you. And I'm like, something bad's happening here. If you had actually physically attacked him, yeah, I would have passed out on the desk. So yeah. I guess thanks for that. But it would have been good television, too.
It would have been great television. It might have gotten canceled, but I might have gotten fired. It would have been, I don't know, there would have been pluses and minuses.
Well, the show got canceled, and you don't work there anymore anyways. So
yeah.
Here we are.
Yeah.
Here we are. Okay, what was that last year like for you with WWE?
Oh, it was magic. You laugh thinking that I'm lying, but it's not. Nobody else has said this. I loved wrestling in front of no people. I specifically loved wrestling in the Performance Center with no noise.
Yeah.
Because it was like, whoa, this is wild.
I remember, like, was it you and AJ did like a 2 out of 3 falls match or something like that that was like really
crazy? Yeah. So I'm kind of proud of that, but that wasn't what I'm into.
Okay.
Because there were people there. They had the people the who were trained. Yeah, the NXT people who were like, they're not really cheering like a crowd would, like, emotionally, right? So they're just cheering because they're supposed to cheer. And then when it goes to commercial break, we stop and everybody just stops and everybody just sits down. And then they're like, okay, what are we going to do next, right? And but I loved, like, the Performance Center with no Thunderdome. Just like me and Drew Gulak, we're just doing doing wild stuff. I wrestled Claudio, and we were just talking about that the other day. It was a lot of fun. And then I was a little bit a part of the creative team.
What was that like? Because I remember hearing that you were part of the creative team. And, like, how did that come about? And, like, even for you to, like, accept that position, we all know what that position can be like.
Yeah.
Obviously different for you, but.
So the pandemic was happening. Somebody in one of my segments, it was right before Bree was about to give birth to our son, Buddy. And it was like a month before that, somebody in one of my segments had gotten COVID.
Oh, shit.
And they called me and said, hey, you were in a segment with somebody who got COVID. A bunch of people in the segment got COVID. You might have COVID. I tested. I didn't have COVID. But then I said, I'm probably not coming to work.
Yeah.
I didn't say, like, hey, I'm absolutely not coming to work. I'd say, like, hey, I don't think I should come to work. My wife's pregnant. We didn't, do soon. And so they were completely fine with that. They were great with that. And then Bruce Pritchard called me and said, hey, I know you're gone, but would you like to be a part of the creative team, be a part of the meetings and stuff like that they were doing all through Zoom and all that kind of stuff anyways? And I said, yeah. And so I did that. Huh. I loved it. I know a lot of people have talked a lot of crap about writers or...
Oh, thankless job.
Yeah, it's a thankless job. I think there's a lot of smart, fun writers.
Absolutely.
That I loved working with.
I would always think that too, because, like, you see those writers and, like, obviously they have amazing resumes. They are smart, brilliant people. You're just working within certain circumstances, but they're amazing.
And so, there's a writer... I hope he still works there. I think people sometimes reach out to me via text, but I never check my phone. And then I'm like, I have over 3,000 unread text messages on my phone.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I texted you months and months ago to do this show and you didn't respond to me.
text is a bad way to get a hold of me.
I'll text Bree next time.
Yeah. Actually, texting Bree is the most efficient way to...
People do that to me too. It's bullshit. People always message me for John. It's so not fair.
Yeah, well, we've got the game figured out. Mm-hmm. So, like, Ryan Callahan, who was one of, if not the lead SmackDown writer at the time, we would talk about SmackDown sometimes on Mondays. He's like, hey, I'd like to run some ideas by you, and we talk. But then we just talk afterwards. I love Ryan. Like, I loved dealing with Bruce Pritchard. Like, I know some people talk bad about Bruce. I love Bruce. Like, I really enjoyed it. I loved working with the writers. Jen
Pepperman.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Jen is hilarious.
She's great. I love Jen.
And she won 2 Emmys.
She's amazing.
Right? Yeah. So, like,
so people that want to, like, talk shit on the writing team, they are very qualified, right?
Well,
just so you know.
Not only are they qualified, they're fun people to be around if you can accept that they're not wrestlers, right?
Yeah.
And they're just like, hey, this is a fun person to talk to.
Yeah.
Like, I found... Kirsch.
I knew it was going to be Kirsch.
He's the best.
Yeah, love Kirsch.
Yeah, so many people are just so much fun.
So you had such a great time. You look at the career you were able to have at WWE. You got to do so many amazing things. What came down to you deciding to part ways with them?
So people think I had 2 options between WWE and AEW, and... the reality was that I was considering 3 options, which was WWE, AEW, or just not being a full-time wrestler anymore and just being more of a full-time dad.
Yeah.
When I told that to Brie with the money that each company was offering me, I think she wanted to kill me. She might have wanted to kill me. But really it came down to a little bit schedule, a little bit of creative freedom, and also just this idea of I had been there for so long maybe something a little bit new would be fun. I also kind of wanted to bleed. And
okay.
And so, which is a weird thing to say.
Let's unpack that a little bit.
Okay. So
what is the deal?
There is some. So if you were to ask me to bleed right now, in front of however many people we have here,
the hard way, you brother,
I would say, no thanks. That doesn't sound like fun. You get in front of 1,000 people in the moment, inside a wrestling ring, bleeding. There's something about it that just makes you feel very alive. Right? It's just.
Is it like the blood in your eyes, in your mouth?
I don't
know.
You're
fighting for your life a little harder.
I don't know what it is. There's just something to it.
Okay, so you wanted to go to AEW. You wanted to do this different style. You kind of wanted to just, especially at this age as well, to like see what this, I don't want to call it like a last run, but like really strong years of like kind of being in your prime, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of just kind of figuring out like what else can you do? You're a man that is like a wrestler's wrestler. Was there also, I don't know if I like read this somewhere, was there an option of you maybe staying with WWE and also doing dates with New Japan?
Yeah, I think they were trying to make that work out.
Yeah.
Which it eventually did not work out.
Did not.
So, which I think is good for everybody.
100%. So, definitely.
So, yeah.
So what was the moments like between you leaving WWE and then going to AEW?
Well, I took 5 months off.
Yeah.
And it was great because I didn't really watch wrestling or think about wrestling for kind of the first time in my life. And I just spent time with my kids, and we were in Tahoe, and we were hiking, and we were just doing, it was amazing. Yeah. Which is why the third option of not going anywhere was very appealing to me.
I get it. When you get to spend time with your kids like that and just kind of step away, and you've already been able to scratch that itch for so long. I mean, of course, there's things that you want to do and all that, but when you see your kids and you get to hang out with them, I definitely get, like, even times for me, I'm like, should I just hang at home with this baby right now? Because it's really a good time.
Yeah.
It's lovely. It's yeah. So nice. Let's go back to when you retired.
Okay.
What all went into, I mean, I know obviously the medical side of things of you having to retire, but having to go out and actually like cut that promo. We were in Washington when you retired as well, mm-hmm. right? Your mom was in the crowd?
My mom was in the crowd. A couple of my friends were in the crowd. Yeah, it was weird because Vince McMahon had called me on the Saturday. It was a Monday when I came out and gave the speech. He called me on a Saturday and said, we're not going to clear you. I'd like you to announce your retirement on Monday. Because people, at that point, it's getting close to WrestleMania. People are wanting me to come back. I'm wanting to come back. Like, let's just get everything out of the way. Don't give them hope. And what better place to do it than in Seattle, where you're from, that sort of thing. And at first, I was like, I got to think about it. And then I talked to Bree. Like, they're not going to let me wrestle. I might as well be able to do it in front of my friends and family in the building where my dad last saw me wrestle,
yeah.
which was, like, very emotional for me. And so, yeah. So it was a really hard day. It was a hard day.
So even leading up to that day, though, like, having that conversation with Vince and swallowing that pill of, like, I've got to walk away from this right now. Like, what were those conversations you were having with yourself, the conversations you were having with Brie, with your family? Like, what? I can't imagine somebody saying, you can't do this thing you love anymore.
Yeah, so it was hard, but it wasn't as hard as it sounds, and it's, especially with how much I love wrestling. Because once I did the speech and I stepped away, I wasn't around wrestling.
Yeah.
So I started, oh God, but then we had to film Total Bellas. Jesus. Okay, that's the part I forgot.
Yeah.
Okay, so then shortly after this, so I have to give this retirement speech, and then I have to go live in John Cena's house.
Woohoo! Like, take off your shoes.
Because we're filming Total Bellas. I hate. I don't hate many things. I hate filming reality
television. What do you hate the most about it?
All of it. It's just like you're constantly changing clothes on mm-hmm. the same day to go film something to pretend like it's a different day. This is supposed to be reality. Can't I just wear my same clothes? And they're like, no, you cannot.
Just have a uniform like John, and white t-shirt and jeans.
And I also, it was really hard because, you know, like when you're going through something like retiring, this thing that you love gets taken away from you. You'd like to be around friends and family. Brie was on the road full time with wrestling. So she was leaving on like Fridays, not coming back till Wednesdays. We'd film Wednesday, Thursday. She leaves on Friday. I'm in John Cena's guest house. There's all these rules. I've got the dog. And like it was just like, I love John, right? Yeah. I think John's great, but that's not the ideal thing to be in. And then they manufacture these arguments that sometimes turn into real arguments.
Great.
And then one of the real arguments got real.
Oh, shit.
And then it was like, oh, Jesus, I don't want to be here anymore. So I just left. And yeah, it was bad.
You and John had an argument?
No. It actually started with me and Nicole having an argument.
Uh-oh.
About, because Bree and I had bought this property. We were going to build a house. I wanted it to be a smaller house. Nicole wanted it to be a bigger house. It's not your house. It's my house. Then it got into this thing about, oh gosh, yeah, so this...
Let's roll up our sleeves. Let's get into it.
It got into this thing about deserving stuff, right?
Oh, shit.
About deserving this or deserving that or whatever it is. And my opinion on all of it is that none of us deserve these things that we've gotten. For example, I've met a lot of fantastic wrestlers along the way who never got to where I was, purely because of luck, good or bad, good luck on my side, bad luck on their side. When you look at somebody like Nigel McGuinness,
right,
who in theory, the only reason he wasn't me or more successful because he was honest about tearing his bicep and I lied about concussions and seizures.
Yeah.
And that wasn't a thing that I went into the doctor. And when they're asking you these questions, it wasn't like I was thinking like, oh, I got to lie to him about my concussion thing. They ask, and in that part of your brain that just reacts on instinct, they said, oh, no, you know, I'm good. And like, yeah. And his thing was like, well, I got to tell him about my bicep tear or whatever. And that's the difference between me getting to where I got and then him never having a match in WWE, right? So anyways, when we get back to the deserving stuff, somebody deserving a bigger house, when a bigger house is worse for the planet, and all that kind of stuff. And Brie and I had talked, and that didn't even seem to be what she wanted anyways. And then we get into this big thing, and then just left. Didn't go to Kathy's wedding, which I feel really bad about, yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, shit, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, it was bad.
Yikes. Yeah. How long did it take for you guys to make up? I mean, you and Nicole are really close.
We apologized and had like that day, but it had put me in a mental state where I was, I mean, that's the closest I've ever come to like, okay, this is, I'm done.
Oh my gosh.
With all of it.
I was not ready for the story.
Yeah.
I did not have that written down. It was not a question.
Hey, let's talk about the worst day of your life. Can we talk about that one?
I do like to get people emotional on the show. That's for sure.
Yeah. I don't get super emotional about it now.
No.
I love my life now.
You got a great life.
I got a great life.
Great life. Hot wife. Cute kids.
Cute kids.
Yeah. Good career. Happening. And not to take away from those amazing, beautiful things, but you mentioned the concussions and the seizures. When you're going through those things, I mean, you were just out recently with injury again. What kind of goes into that? What goes into you being medically cleared again? What is like that process?
Well, So seeing a neurologist, and it was interesting, this last one, he said, you know, after you start feeling better, we're going to have to have a serious talk about your long-term health. And I thought what that meant was, after you feel better, I'm going to talk to you about not wrestling anymore.
Okay.
And that's kind of where I thought he was going. And then my brain scans came back so goddamn good. that not a single person could say anything about it, you know. And I think, you know, it's interesting because I do put a lot of work and effort into keeping my brain healthy and doing things outside of normal stuff to keep my brain healthy. And so I think that's paying dividends a little bit. And so... Yeah.
Tell me about some of that stuff, though, because, okay, so you have to retire due to the concussions, due to all these circumstances. And yeah, you took matters into your own hands. Everyone told you not to wrestle. You went and did your thing. What does that mean? What did you do?
Well, to say everybody told me not to wrestle, that's a bit of a stretch. Because I was cleared, but that was the frustrating part, is that I was cleared by several neurologists.
Okay.
But not the one that mattered most. And then there were two neurologists otherwise who wouldn't clear me. And so it became like kind of a mixed issue.
Right.
Err on the side of caution type thing. But, you know, the developments in medicine and science are so much better now. And so there's a lot of stuff like hyperbaric oxygen therapy and all this kind of stuff that,
you know. How often do you do that? Like, what is that? I hear these words and I don't actually know what that is.
Yeah. I don't think anybody cares.
Oh, okay.
But
I was somewhat interested.
For those of you who do care.
Google it.
It's being placed in like kind of a tube where it's 1.5 atmospheres of pressure, lots of oxygen being flooded into your brain. A lot of the military is doing it for people who have had concussions and all that kind of stuff in military things and that sort of thing. But it's not FDA approved yet, so it's not, for example, I mean, all that stuff's a long process. So anyways, yeah. I did that, where 100 sessions of that, where I'm in there for an hour and a half each time.
That sounds like a claustrophobic nightmare.
Oh, I love a good uncomfortable claustrophobia.
Mm.
I think it's a good chance to like really practice Zen and meditation. And that's a real thing. Like, you put me in an uncomfortable...
That's literally giving me like anxiety. I'd have a heart attack.
You put me in an uncomfortable position. My first thing is to freak out. And then shortly after that, I'm like, can I stay calm in this position? And in most cases, it's yes.
But there has been a no.
Yeah. So when I was, before I had my neck surgery in 2014, they were, God, I forget what it's called. The long needles.
Oh.
The long ones.
The like,
Yeah.
Shit,
they were doing. They were doing something to alleviate the pain.
What was it? No, not acupuncture, right?
No, not
like
acupuncture.
Like the needle.
Yeah, no.
We're talking the good stuff here.
Epidural style. Yeah, epidural style. And so it was like, so they had me, I was face down, and, you know, they numb up your whole back, so I'm not supposed to feel anything. And then all of a sudden I got the worst pain I'd ever felt in my life, and the needle, this giant needle, had hit the nerve. And the doctor was like, oh, God. And like, he said, oh, God. And then...
abort mission.
I screamed out, fuck! and then they're like, well, we're already here. Do you want us to do it? And I was like, do you want us to try again? And I was like, okay. And then they finish, and then they come up to me with all these waivers.
Oh,
they said,
shit.
We forgot to have you sign the waiver. And
great.
I'm just trying to, like, I'm trying to just, like, not die.
Yeah.
And so I signed the waivers, and yeah, finding Zen in that moment, I was not capable.
Oh, that's horrifying.
Yeah, it happens sometimes.
Yeah, I was already in such a state of panic when I was getting my epidural that I was like, just do whatever you got to do back there.
Do whatever you do.
We'll get through this. It's all going to be fine. Okay, so you are reading, you're learning, you're hyperbaric chambering, all of these great things. You get medically cleared to get back in the ring. When it was announced that you were coming out of retirement, I remember, like, we were in San Antonio, I remember that being like, wait, what the fuck just happened? What was that like on your end? Everyone else was rattled.
Oh, it was wild, in the sense of, so I was in the Middle East somewhere doing a signing in the Bahrain Comic-Con is where I was. Flew to Pittsburgh. Did all these evaluations, got cleared by Dr. Maroon, which actually made me cry. Flew the next morning from Pittsburgh to Texas, slept in, got all these text messages on my phone at like 3 p.m. Where are you? You should be at the building. And
you're booked, bud.
And I was like, oh, okay. And then they kind of let me say whatever I wanted, you know, and just saying, you're cleared. Like, you know, I was very lucky in the sense of, for a lot of my time, I would collaborate with writers. I wasn't just given a script and said, hey, say this.
Yeah.
And that was really nice. It was fun. So that was it. And then
Let's just like rewind here for a quick second to you having that conversation with Dr. Maroon.
It wasn't a conversation. He had already left.
Would he leave you a fucking memo? What happened?
He did actually write me a very nice note. Dr. Maroon and I have a great relationship, and you would think it would be different because he was the doctor who wouldn't clear me, but I also knew that he was looking out for my health and the best interest of me. And so, it's really weird because you have these conflicting relationships with people as far as like, he is not clearing me. I desire to be cleared. You'd think we would have conflict, but we don't. We came to an understanding. Mm-hmm. Same thing with like me and Vince. I think it actually made my relationship with Vince McMahon stronger.
Yeah. Probably it's talked to him so much more.
Yeah. 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 And then like also being clear about why he's not clearing me or all that kind of stuff. And then when you really talk to people, I think even people who have very different opinions than you, for example, Mayor Kane and I have very differing.
Yeah. That's a big whoops-a-daisy.
Yeah. Very, very differing, political opinions. But when you come to talk to him and like really talk to him, I think the differences are like social media aggravates the differences rather than makes you feel like most of us are pretty similar and most of us want the best for everybody, but may think different things are better because of this or because of that. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, no, for sure, for sure. Yeah, that's been an interesting follow as of late. AEW. Mm-hmm. The night that you debuted, you and Adam Cole, same night. How did you feel being out in front of a new crowd, coming back as the American Dragon, Bryan Danielson?
It was cool. I mean, just the energy of it was awesome.
Yeah.
So it was just, it was a lot of fun. It was weird, though, because I was in like a trailer, right? In a trailer, like waiting. And then like sometimes people would come in and sometimes they wouldn't. And then, so I was just like, so I go and do this thing. And then all of a sudden I'm meeting all these new people right after. And it was really, really stressful because I'm bad at remembering names.
Blackpool Combat Club.
Okay.
How did this idea come together for you guys to be working together? It started really with you and John, and then it's obviously branched out to you guys having this amazing group, but starting with you and John.
It came about just very organically. And it was just this idea of how do we make me and John's match more interesting when John came back. The original idea was, you guys get into a confrontation, you're watching the matches, and then, you're like, I want you or whatever it is. And I was like, what's more interesting is if my original idea to fight him or was not to fight him, would just be to join him. Well, why do I want to join him? To make wrestling better. Well, what else could we do? And then like, in my head, I'm thinking like, okay, how could I convince him that I'm not just trying to fool him, that I actually want him to do this thing? So then I cut a promo and saying like, imagine the world that we could create if like you and I team together and we take some young guys and we take them under our wing and we fucking teach them how this business should be, goddammit. And like, and when we got to the back after the thing, John was like, yeah, you were pretty persuasive out there.
I'm in.
And then I think persuasive enough that we just joined together after we fought. So so that's kind of how it all came about.
And the serendipitous timing of William Regal becoming available for you guys, I mean, the storyline, obviously, I mean, Regal's such a common thread throughout your entire career, same with John, and for him to become available to come in and work with you guys.
Yeah, he's perfect.
God, he's so great.
And even without Blackpool Combat Club or whatever, I just like being able to see him every week.
Yeah.
Right? Like he's more of a mentor to me than most people know. If you want something that's a little on the emotional side, so my dad struggled with alcoholism my entire life. And that's why I've never drank anything like that. And that was something that I always really struggled with. William Regal, because he's struggled with addiction in the past, helped me learn to love my dad without trying to change him. Like just learn to love him as he was.
Yeah.
And so that was, so just being able to be around Darren every week is just like it's a real gift.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us, guys. Hopefully you enjoyed the week, enjoyed the best of the sessions. You guys can hear the full length interviews anywhere that you listen to podcasts. Just download them. Give them a listen, give them a like, a review.
And if you want to see what you're hearing, head on over to my YouTube page. Just search Renee Paquette. It's all up there, and you can see us talking, having this interview, having a hangout. It's all up on there, and that's been like a really great, cool, growing community. So I'm really enjoying the hangouts on the YouTube as well, so we can see you guys over there. And jump in the comment section, you know? Jump in, chime in, leave a comment. We like filtering through them all, reading about them, maybe even like, I don't know, some constructive criticism if you had it. We're all ears. God, did I open up a can of worms by saying that? I don't know. Be nice. Be cool in there. This has been The Sessions.